This is the Love Foco Show.
People look each other in the eye, they care about each other, they know each other. And to me, that's when someone says, what is it about Fort Collins? I think it's that. And then, you know, when people move here, we kind of socialize them into it.
Welcome to the Love Foco Show. Our podcast highlights the incredible people who make Fort Collins the place we're proud to call home. Each week, your host, Jeff Faust, sits down with local leaders, community champions, and changemakers to share their stories, what they love about our city, and how they're helping it thrive. So whether you're out on the trail, at a brewery, or walking through Old Town, thanks for tuning in.
Today, we're sitting down with the current mayor of Fort Collins, Jenny Arndt. She has been in public service for a number of years. Her leadership and history in Fort Collins is unique and encouraging. I think you're going to hear a lot of her servant heart, her risk-taking leadership, kind of entrepreneurial background, and a worldview and perspective that has shaped her into an incredible leader today. The best part, she is loving our city well. And even if you didn't vote for her, I think you will love this interview. I know I loved sitting down with her. So with that, let's jump right in to this interview with Jenny Arndt. Jenny, thank you so much for taking time to be on the podcast with me. It's the Love Foco podcast show. So grateful. We're in the mayor's office. I've never been here before, so this is a thrilling time for me too.
And the mayor's lair.
I love it. Thanks for inviting me in and sharing some of your time with me. This podcast, just for all of our listeners, it's really dedicated to highlighting people who are loving our city one life at a time. And we do that in big ways, we do that in small ways. You're definitely one of those people, the way you've served publicly and you've been in a leadership position in our community. I'd love to dig into that and talk about the ways that you're serving and caring for our city. But I wanna start our conversation the way I start every podcast, and that's kind of how you began in Fort Collins. So tell us a little bit about your Fort Collins origin story.
Okay, well, it's a pleasure and thank you for having me. And thank you for doing something called Love Foco. It's lovely. Yes. So I always say, and it's true, my parents moved me here when I was 3 weeks old from Boulder. I was born in Boulder. My parents were graduate students and they were looking for a place to raise a family. And so they looked no further than Fort Collins.
I love it. So right away I hear, so we want to raise a family. So let's move from Boulder.
Right.
And we're going to land in Fort Collins.
Right. And they really liked the innovative atmosphere that was up here. Both my parents were entrepreneurs. So, yeah. Very creative, risk-taking people. So I grew up on Crestmore Place and I was just at Polaris today talking to some students. And of course, back in the day, it was more school. So I freaked them out and said, well, I went to school here 50 years ago. And they were like, God, how old is she? And they said, how that? I said, well, I just ran around the corner, went to school, went home for lunch, had the happy childhood that Fort Collins really afforded us in terms of being a very middle-class family and the classic bi-level neighborhood packed of kids. My parents chose that house because when they looked at it, they said the courtyard was full of kids playing baseball.
Yeah.
And I just had that sort of, I think of it as a very idyllic childhood.
Yep.
No leash laws back then, so my dog used to wait on the corner for me when I'd come around from school. Good health care, great schools. Good living, healthy place to be raised. And then
did you grow up like your whole childhood here?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I elementary all the way through
Blevins, Pooter.
Wow.
Then I went to Colorado College in 1982, graduated in 86. So
you just dated yourself on the podcast too.
Oh, I was born in 1964, let's be clear. it's all written down somewhere.
Yeah.
People know these things.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I started on my journey of, I guess I went to grad school in Boulder and my husband went to Colorado State. And then we were, as a married couple, went in the Peace Corps in 1990.
Yeah.
And Morocco. And then we didn't come back to Fort Collins to live till 2008.
Wow.
Yeah.
So a pretty significant time away. So I have to ask you questions about the Peace Corps. So I'm gonna I'm gonna try to remember that. If I don't bring that back up, let's bring that back up. But I'm curious about some upbringing. Just a quick question for me. Your parents, that you had said that they were looking and they were fascinated by kind of like this, opportunity to raise a family, I think is what you said. But you also said they were attracted to the innovative part of our city.
100%.
So tell me a little bit about that, because this is part of the Fort Collins story I've come to love.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear that from your vantage point. Like even, you know, a few decades ago, I mean, this is a part of the rich history of Fort Collins, this innovative spirit.
Right. So we're in the Smithsonian Institute as the city of innovation, right? Yeah. And there's a reason for that. And my parents really tapped into that. And here's what I think is special is when you have risk takers and entrepreneurs live, you don't stand out as someone weird, right?
Yeah.
So my dad eventually had a bankruptcy, but you know, that's just, he's trying hard.
Part of the territory.
That's part of kind of how it used to be or can still be when you're taking a lot of risks. So he was an early developer and he did a lot of projects around town I could talk about, that'll spare you. But really this idea of looking to the future and being optimistic. And now that I'm mayor, we go back 50 years when our trail system started. We go back 52 years ago when Platte River Power Authority, the public power, came together and started. We go back, Transport started 50 years ago. What was in the DNA?
Right. Like
50 years ago, the guy across the street from us was president of the school board. His name was Gene Mitchell. He was also known as the father of Old Town.
Okay.
Our next door neighbor, right, just to the right of us, was a county commissioner. My dad was president of the chamber. I mean, I don't know what was going on in this small little town. There were a bunch of people coming together to really grow a great community.
Yep.
And they did it. And part of the reason why I wanted to run for mayor is I wanted to try to keep that going.
Yeah.
That pragmatic, open-minded, risk-taking place where people could find a home.
Yeah.
So that's how we grew up. When I was 6, my dad quit his job. We took all the money and rented our house, sold our cars, and went to Europe, bought a Volkswagen van, and traveled around for 6 months in a camper van.
Wow.
I thought that was a completely normal thing to do.
Yeah.
Doesn't everyone camp for 6 months with their parents?
turns out, no.
I don't know.
Turns out, no.
I looking back, I'm like, were you guys hippies? And the schools were just like, great, no homework, no accountability, no tests. You're going to learn more in Europe than you'll ever learn here.
Yep.
And you came back and that was just, everyone was like, oh, it just was. And then my dad never had a job again. He was just constantly entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And then the interesting thing, my father died in 1991. And we thought, oh, you know, we always wonder about how my mom kind of put up with the ups and downs of the entrepreneur life. And guess who was the real entrepreneur then?
Yeah,
oh, my mom started. Yeah. So growing up, we always had, even the kids, we had my brothers used to paint stripes on the parking lots, right? And then go around town and get bids to repaint parking lots at night.
Yes.
We had invented this weird hat. I used to sell jewelry. Like, it, when our family was just completely normal to start a business side hustle.
Yeah.
And that's what I think makes, so when you do that, and then I tell this story a lot. I was at the Silver Grill talking to somebody. And they go, what do you mean by this? And I go, well, let's see. Our server came over and I said, I can see your server at the Silver Grill. And she said, yes. I said, do you do anything else on the side? She goes, yeah. And she took her hand out in her pocket, handed me her business card. She makes organic pet food at night.
Yeah.
And I looked at the person I was dining with. I said, just like that.
Yep.
It always feels like you introduced yourself to me earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Have a job.
I have multiple hats. I'm
and
not aware.
You're, yeah, and now you're doing love.
That's soda. Right.
Like we're all... Yeah. Doing it. It's fun.
Yeah, it is. But there is something about your family. I mean, hearing your dad and let's risk it, let's go for it. Hearing your mom, you know, a strong female kind of with her own entrepreneurial spirit that does have a way of trickling down to the point where you go through elementary, middle, high here and you meet your husband and you're like, well, let's join the Peace Corps, go to different country. And so there's something that impacted you even in your upbringing that was like, no, this is part of how you live. This is,
oh yeah.
And your world, I mean, I just imagine it had to have expanded and you got to see so many different things through that. What a gift, really. What a gift that one, that you can grow up here in this amazing city that so many of us come to love, but also that you weren't so tied to it that you had at all costs to hunker down and stay, but you were able to still risk it and go and see the world and do different things. So tell me a little bit about, I heard you say Morocco.
Right.
So I spent a little time in Morocco, okay. Marrakesh and Casablanca and things. The romantic in me, the film romantic in me had to at least stop there. Tell me a little bit about your time in the Peace Corps. And you were in your 20s, is that right? Or
how old were we? Yeah, 26 till 28.
Okay.
And I was a teacher in the Peace Corps, very classic Peace Corps assignment. No. And I was sent to a school that had girls and boys in it. But Morocco has, you know, especially 30 years ago, they had a teacher for the boys, but they didn't have a teacher for the girls.
Yep.
So I wasn't displacing anybody, but these girls would have not had a teacher.
Yeah.
So I was at their school for 2 years.
Yep.
And it was in a very poor section of Rabat, the capital.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was lovely. And we went back last Christmas.
Oh, really?
Two Christmases ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we took our kids.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it was lovely to see how much that country has gone from a low middle income country up to a middle income, very sophisticated, very tourism oriented,
very tourism. Yeah.
Standard of living has been increased. Yep. You know, it's really remarkable.
It was in Morocco that I was first introduced to like really good, authentic mint tea and couscous meals.
Good.
And
the food's on.
I don't think I can ever eat couscous the same way again. I mean, it's just
not the stuff in the box. Well,
yeah,
no.
Just so good.
So good. Delicious.
Okay, so we're into kind of your journey of stepping away from Fort Collins. Where else did you go about those times and how were you shaped? I mean,
sure.
Did you go from Morocco back to Fort Collins, or were there other stops along the way?
No, in Morocco, my husband, we both had a master's degree when we went to Morocco, and he was an ag economist. And he met an ag economist from Purdue University, who was head of the department there.
Okay.
And this man, Wally, and his wife had been in Peace Corps in India in the 60s.
Wow.
So he liked Peace Corps volunteers, and we got to know Wally. And he said, hey, when you're done here, what are you going to do? And like any good Peace Corps people, we were like, I don't know. He said, well, why don't you guys come to Purdue University? And we're like, where's that? He goes, unbelievable. We went to Purdue because of Wally Tyner.
Wow.
And my husband got a PhD in ag econ.
Okay.
I got a second master's at that point, specializing in special education.
Okay.
Later, I went and got my PhD too, because I can't get beat them.
Yes.
Can't. And then I got it in teaching how to teach teachers, literacy and language. And then my husband really wanted to have an international career. And I said, great, but you know, we also had a value of having children. And I said, well, physically, that will keep me in one spot pretty much. So we do have three children.
Awesome.
And they're all born in Indiana, which is...
Wow.
And
Midwest kids.
I know, it is funny. And then we were there for 9 years. We were there for 4 years. And then we went to Denmark to do his postdoc.
Okay.
And we had two kids. So I stayed home and it wasn't worth it to do anything. And then this is how I got the third kid. Then he said, I want to go back and take a professorship at Purdue. And the Midwest, you know, being a Westerner, you know, and being as sort of, I'm not that rule oriented, even though I make rules, you know, I haven't always been that great at following them. I was never that comfortable there. And so I said, look, I'll go back, but we're going to have a third baby. That was my negotiation.
All right.
So that's how we got Mason.
Yeah.
So we went back. It was a great job. And that's when I did my PhD.
Okay.
It was an affordable place to live. And
yeah.
I could have three kids and study at night and kind of do that. And then from there, one of our values was to have our kids grow up at least partially in Africa. And so we thought the kids were really old at 4, 6, and 8. My husband had an opportunity to move to Maputo, Mozambique, and be an advisor to the government there through Purdue. And I got a job at the American school doing what I was good at, teaching. And so we moved there and for 2 years, but 2 went to 4 and 4 went to 6.
Wow.
And then my husband quit Purdue because they said, if you don't come back, you can't work here anymore.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, we're not coming back.
Yeah.
And they were like, what? And then when it was time to leave Mozambique, We were looking for a place to live in the United States, and my husband said, why don't we live in your hometown?
Yeah.
And I start crying. And he goes, I think that means yes. And I go, yeah.
An intuitive man.
I know.
Picking up on the signs.
Exactly. So we had been coming here each summer to visit my mom.
Okay.
And so the kids were familiar with it.
Yeah.
And they had the IB curriculum, the same curriculum we had in Mozambique. And so it was just a good fit. And then we came back in 2008.
Wow, what a journey. And I mean, you've listed a couple continents already between going to Europe as a child, now two different countries in Africa, two different parts of
Denmark
Africa.
Denmark,
yeah,
Dem-
yeah, that's right, Denmark. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, Indiana can feel like a different world too.
That's what I say. People say, well, what was your biggest cultural shock? I said, yeah. Indiana.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. That's not. Oh,
I'm from the Midwest originally, so I moved out here. And I always tell people it's a great place to be from. You know, I don't mind my upbringing. I look back at some memories very fondly, but it's cloudy from Halloween until spring break. And the snow just piles on top of each other, you know, here.
But not good skiing.
No skiing. And I think I've played golf every month of the calendar year, you know, because if it's a 55-degree and sunny day in January, you can go hit the links. And so it's...
And I'm a long distance runner. And I remember in Indiana, they had a skull and crossbones. It was three quarters of a mile path. And they had a big billboard with a skull and crossbones that said, you must have your doctor's permission before you attempt this trail. In Colorado, I go do a 50K, you know?
It's like, that's cute. That's cute,
I was
Indiana.
Like, well, these aren't, maybe, I don't, I've just felt like a fish out of water.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this. Purdue University is a wonderful university.
Yeah.
Actually, my husband works back there now.
Yeah.
And it was a great place to raise kids.
And I would imagine, like, there's some similar fields of overlap between, like, our great university, CSU, and Purdue.
They're both land grants. That's right.
Land grants, tons of engineering work coming out of there. Yeah.
And the university is really quite remarkable.
Yeah.
And so he's back there running a global trade analysis project now. I mean, he commutes.
I'm sitting here listening to you, I'm like, you have an incredible amount of education in your background too.
I do.
I have my undergraduate degree. I did 1 year after that. I was like, all right, that's it for me. I mean, but you said two master's degree, went back and got your PhD.
Then I started my MBA up here.
Then you started your MBA here.
My husband says, if you go to, and I have my law school book beside my bed. He's like, honey, if you go to law school, I swear I'm going to.
Yeah. Late career change here, and I love it.
I just
it.
Like school.
Well, leaders are readers, right? That's what we were saying. It was like, I mean, you're just going to continue growing and leading and learning, and those things just go together. They just go together. I'm curious because actually you're mayor of Fort Collins now. I want to get into your kind of like current role soon, but I find myself curious about your education background and your world travels, like, and how those have impacted you for today.
Oh yeah.
Because Fort Collins is a different place than Mozambique.
100%.
You know, but all these things, they've impacted you as at a personal level. They've shaped you. Those experiences, they don't leave very easily. And so how has that impacted you as a leader today?
It fills me with gratitude, for real. I mean, I'm a very optimistic, future looking person. And I try to honor the past all the time as well, because the people who came before us were obviously very forward-thinking themselves. Yeah. But it gives you perspective, right? Mozambique was the poorest country in the world when we moved there, because my husband's actual specialty within what he does is he specializes in poverty. And those experiences really help you understand at a very deep level what we have here and how much a community can give and how wealthy we are and how we should be and to have the obligation to take care of everyone in our community in a way that reflects all the kindness and love and resources that we have.
Yeah.
So I'm very serious about that. It also helps me keep a steady, calm demeanor I don't like it when things go wrong, but I can also see they're not going that wrong, right? And we keep trying to make everything better for people and our residents and provide top services. But if we're so wealthy that we're not converting tennis courts to pickleball courts because there's two different sets of lines, that tells me we're a very wealthy community.
Yeah. We're solving different kinds of problems.
right. That's right. And that's a real problem for some people. And sure. I honor that.
Sure.
And I realize, you know, so it gives me perspective.
That perspective and that gratitude, that undercurrent of gratitude, yeah. particularly when, like maybe around us, right? There's an undercurrent of stress or an undercurrent of anxiety. Yeah. For you to be able to say, actually, like I've seen some things.
Correct.
Like this will pass. Or I've seen some things. So like, let me just remind you, we live in an incredible place. And we want to take all of your concerns, you know, we want to tackle them head on and we want to address these things. But you can kind of almost be self-differentiated in a way and stand... have a different kind of perspective and say, no, we're going to deal with this, but I just want you to know the swirl you're feeling is not the swirl that's out there, actually. Like, we're on different levels here.
Yes. I mean, I met a young woman last week at Climate Week in New York, and she said, I'd like to move to Colorado, but there's not enough water. I said, there's enough water. She said, what do you mean? And I said, well, there's enough water. We are looking at a water shorter future. We would just have to change the way we live. And so far, we haven't changed the way we live.
Right.
So there's a lot of steps we can do before we don't have water. And she said, oh, well, like, well, you know, we live, you know, the space that each American, not every American, but many Americans commandeer, including myself, I have a very nice house, is remarkable.
Yeah.
Even compared to European standards.
Yeah.
Right? I made the suggestion, I have a condo in Denver from when I was a legislator, that why do we each have our own washer dryer in our units? We should just have one unit be washer dryers that we could just share. Oh my goodness, you would have thought I was taking away some.
Those are fighting words right there. How
I'm like,
dare you?
No, I go, why do we each need our own of everything, right?
Yeah.
And so our standards are extremely high.
They are. I remember, so I lived in Southern Spain. When I was in my 20s.
Okay.
And I remember in the Andalusia province, they have like real water issues, and different kinds of water issues. It was common to just turn the shower on and then scrub your hair, you know, turn it off.
Okay, right.
And then turn it back on to rinse, and that was it.
With the tank above you.
That's it.
You got a little tank, right? And you turn it on early so it heats the water in the tank, and that's what you get?
I mean, it's a...
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, in every European hotel, you put the key card in that turns on the master so you can on the lights. And then you take the key with you and it turns all the lights on.
All the electric, yeah.
In America, you walk in, the TV is on and it's massive. The first thing I do is turn off the AC and I turn off the TV. But those...
That's so interesting, isn't it? That like hospitality in the United States means the TV is on when you open the door.
And it's freezing. And it's freezing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So all those tell me... I'm very grateful, and we're very blessed.
Yeah, it's this like this beautiful tension, right? Of this, it is almost an idyllic place to live. I mean, constantly we're being written about. Our city is being remarked on about how wonderful of a place it is to live. People would love to move towards us and find their space, and yet it's by leaving Fort Collins that some of that gratitude grows, that some of that perspective expands, so that when you come back, I mean, this city has a way of boomeranging all kinds of people back to it, as part of your story, as you've mentioned. You come back with a foresight and just this appreciation for where we live, our neighbors, and what we can do to make a difference. I think that's sweet. Thank you so much for sharing part of that with us. And
well, we have podcasts called Love NoCo.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You're a case in point.
Well, hopefully more than my mom listens to this thing. So.
I'm going to listen.
Yeah. Well, I would love to talk a little bit about, you know, you're obviously the mayor of our city, but you've done a number of different things. You've seen all kinds of different spots in our city. So as you grew up here, as you have come back here, you know, as you, you know, visited in the summers to see your mom and introduce your kids to this great city, and now as you live here, what are the things you just like when you get in a room with other mayors, or you get in a room with other leaders, or you're casting vision about who our city, what are some of the things that really just continually come back? This is why I love this city.
You know, I'm a humanist, so I've learned this over time. People telling me that, and I was like, oh, okay, I don't know. So I'm always looking at the people. I mean, we have amenities and we have this, and then we have, well, I do love our parks and our open, you know, we don't. Yeah. But honestly, it's when you walk down the street, people, somebody says hi.
Yeah.
You know, if you just stop and notice what people are doing, it's quite remarkable. I was running at the track the other day on a Sunday morning, and every single person, nobody's looking at anybody, nobody knows there's only four of us. Every person on the way out picked up a little piece of trash. Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, nobody's looking, right? Those are the things that I notice. Like,
that is unique, by the way. I don't know how many cities that would take place. Like, maybe just clean up trash when no one's watching.
It's remarkable. You know, just even the traffic patterns, you know, I mean, okay, there's a little more road rage than there used to be. But I mean, honestly, I just pulled up to a stop sign just today, and a transport bus came exact time. You know, and he's like waving me on, you know, and it was just this idea that people look each other in the eye, they care about each other, they know each other. And to me, that's when someone says, what is it about Fort Collins?
Yeah.
I think it's that. And then, you know, when people move here, we kind of socialize them into it.
I was going to say, because an interesting thing about that is how you maintain that level of familiarity and proximity and, you know, deference to others and you know, loving people well, how you maintain that as a city grows, I would imagine is a challenge.
That is a challenge.
It's gotta be a challenge.
And it's a worry, right? It's,
yeah.
It's a worry and a challenge, but I do think the socialization process, you know, when our daughter was four, we came for a visit and I said hi to somebody at City Park. She goes, do we know him?
Yes.
And I said, oh, honey, no, that's not what I'm looking for, right?
Right.
And so now she lives in New York City and we're walking down the street. She's like, hi. I'm there you go. That's
I had a really similar experience. So we had an intern that came and lived with us and she lived in our basement. My wife and I and our kids, we're just like, this is what we do. Like if there's an intern in our organization, like come stay in our basement or whatever. We went for a walk and we're just kind of showing our intern our neighborhood. And everybody, I mean, I grew up in Iowa. I moved from Kansas City, but I grew up in Iowa. It felt like we were in a walk in Iowa. Everybody was talking to each other. Everyone was looking at each other in the eye, smiling. And after about the 10th person, she's like, do you know every person in this city? And we're like, no, I don't know personally any of the people. But this is like its own little subculture of friendly and like just appreciation for one another. And it leads to other things like waving someone through, I mean, minor, waving someone through on the travel, but like picking up trash when no one's watching.
Minor, but really important.
And very important to like the deeper culture of who we are.
I feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mom is 89 now and she walks up and down her street for exercise and stuff. And she missed 2 weeks last winter and I got like 3 phone calls from her neighbors. Is your mom okay? I noticed she didn't walk by my house today.
Hmm.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, thank you so much. And actually, she has pneumonia. She has a cold, you know, we're taking care of her. And thank you for noticing.
Right.
What?
Yeah, it's incredible.
I know.
Yeah.
When the guy who sold the grocery store Beavers, Doug Beavers, we've known him for years, he said specifically that one of the checkers that was going to stay, even though they sold the store, her name is Angie, was going to look after my mom.
Wow.
And I just start crying.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just like that.
Yep.
Feels like that.
Yeah.
So.
I think that's really sweet. It just reminds me even something you brought up earlier about even the cul-de-sac. You know, I mean, one, good on your parents. So they're looking for a home. They're not just looking for a house. They're looking for a home. So they're paying attention, like, how many kids are in this neighborhood? What's the cul-de-sac like? It was filled with kids and people were playing. They're like, okay, we could do this. Right.
Well, the funny thing is the other house they're looking at was the corner of Oak and Jackson, which is worth about $2 million right now. Yeah, and they bought the crappy bi-level on Crestmore Place for like, and I think when we left, we sold it for $280.
Yeah.
I'm like, apples and oranges, Mom, what? And she goes, there were more kids over there.
Yeah.
I thought you kids would be happier here.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, and we could get into a really fascinating conversation about house prices. I mean, this is got to be a challenge for your seat. I mean, this has got to be an interesting
That's a sad.
It's a conversation part, I would imagine many of you are. I mean, I know I'm having it. Like, gosh, how can I help? I mean, even its impact, like things like talent acquisition. Like, how do you get someone to move from out of city to the city? These are challenges.
It's a very big challenge. I mean, it really is prohibitive, and it is a thing that really does worry me. Again, as humanists, right?
Yeah.
We're aging. Which is fine. I like people in my age group and older. And we need young, vibrancy and young families, right?
Yep.
And, you know, when your teachers and firefighters and police officers can't live where they work, it really hollows out a community.
Yep.
And I really, like you'd see in Africa, where the workforce comes in and works and goes out.
Yep.
Those aren't really very stable communities.
Right.
Because the social fabric isn't interwoven.
You want your civil servants to live in the zip codes where they're served. Yeah.
Too much segregation. Yeah. So we in America, unfortunately, we segregate ourselves politically and social and economically. Yeah. If you look a map of Fort Collins and you do it by party affiliation or by economics, we really have done that.
Yeah.
So really we're looking for more mixed housing types instead of like from the 800s, like all these houses in this neighborhood are $800,000 or more. Like, I hate those.
Great. Okay. I'll just keep driving down the road.
And... Yeah. What we're really looking for. And somebody said, oh, Jenny, you're going to love this new development. It's all for senior citizens. I'm like, actually, the best neighborhood I ever lived in was in Denmark, where it was
totally intergenerational,
totally mixed.
Yeah.
And we shared a house. We had half of it.
Yep.
And there was a divorced mom with two kids on the apartment above. And there was a senior citizen below.
Yeah.
And I had the car.
So here we go again. I mean, your external worldview helping your local, because I mean, that's what, I mean, and it helps everybody. A rising tide lifts all boats, right? So the mental health, it helps everybody across the generations.
It did. And that's also where we had one big washer dryer room for everybody.
Yeah.
Because you just need it once a week for Pete's age, you know? Now, of course, being an American, I always forgot my daytime since slaw. My husband was like, did you do the laundry? I'm like, I forgot again.
Yeah.
I'm American, man. Usually I do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the senior citizens watch my kids, and I had the car. I'd get all the shopping done, and they loved playing with the kids. And then they'd be out, or I'd be out with the kids at the communal park, and somebody's in cooking dinner. And it was just this synergistic, really wonderful way to live.
Yeah.
So when we separate ourselves by age, by socioeconomic status, by political affiliation, I think it really hurts us all.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And, you know, I imagine this will be something that the future mayor will have to talk about, and future citizens of our great city will have to keep talking about that. Not only water rights and things like that, but also housing and affordability and how that impacts the general kind of fabric of our city and
our zoning. You were probably saw the zoning kerfuffle we went through, but that'll continue.
Well, tell me, let's just kind of transition. I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, your upbringing, how that's impacted you today. It's incredible. The things that you loved about our city, I mean, the people, and it really is a unique way that our lives are interacting together. Even that risk-taking and entrepreneurial spirit that, gosh, the more I dig into the city of our, or the history of our city, excuse me, the more I'm like enthralled and impressed.
I know.
By
so many things have been invented. Yeah.
So many forward-thinking people. It's really encouraging. It really is.
It's fun.
But you've also served as the mayor of this great city. And so you've had a unique insight to some of the challenges, some of the beauties and the benefits. Tell me a little bit about, I would love to hear, as you discover these things, as you lead in these spaces, how you see your public service, your volunteerism, your citizenship of our city. Like, how are you loving our city? How are you loving Fort Collins, right? Love FOCO, this is the pie. So what are some things that you see are really integrated in your life in that
space?
Well,
when I moved back in 08, I would say also Fort Collins has shown me a lot of love and given me many opportunities. So my high school teachers remembered me and asked me to run for state representative.
Wow.
So that's how people are like, how'd you get into politics? Yeah. I'm like, oh, they asked me. I was like, no. I was like, I'm not doing that. Why would I quit my job and live in Denver? It looks like a terrible job.
So, before that, had you thought about running?
No.
That's so fascinating to me because you're, I mean, you're like a great leader. I mean, you've had so many different ways that you've led.
I had a great job.
Yeah. And yet someone grabbed you and looked you in the eye. They remembered you and they said, you should do this. Like you would be good at this.
Correct.
Sometimes we just need that.
His name was Bob Bacon and I'm going to kill him. He was my high school teacher. But and I kept saying no. And then finally he said, Jenny, your community needs you. And I said, you know, Bob, that's the only thing you could say that would make me do it. And he goes, I know, that's why I said it. Yeah. I was like, so he had been school board, state rep, and then our state senator.
Okay.
And so I did, when I realized that an election was just an opportunity to ask the community if they want you to serve.
Yeah.
Then it became not scary. I was right. Like, oh, wait, I've been volunteering for things my whole life. Yep. Now I'm just going to volunteer, and if the community thinks that I'd be a good volunteer,
yep,
they can choose me through a ballot, which is a little bit scary, but you know, and I got over the whole election boogeyman thing. And then I also realized that being elected is community service.
Yeah.
So those two.
Oh, it's an act of love.
Realization.
I mean, it has got to be an act of love.
Yeah, it is an act.
It's almost impossible to lead right now. So it is if you're listening to this, you just got to know Jenny is loving our city by serving our city.
It is an act of love. Someone said to me last week, she goes, oh, is it fun? I go, no.
That's not the word I would use.
I'm not saying I'm miserable. It's just like when I go fun, I have other ideas. But so I was state rep from 2014 to 2021 when honestly people called and said, will you run for mayor?
Yeah.
I was like, wait, I make 29 grand a year now. You want me to make 14 a year? Yeah. They go, yeah.
Well, and I don't know that everybody knows that. So I would just like just tell the listeners, like what you're, because it's.
I know people think it's.
They
like
think it's
all
like
that.
This full time, amazing place. You got the mayor mansion that you're just residing
people
in.
People ask me that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is not that.
It is not that.
Yeah.
So when I ran, I knew full well. So it was $14,000 a year the first 2 years.
Yep.
Then we did ask the voters if they would pay more.
Yeah.
And they said yes. Yep. Very gratefully. So the mayor makes 75% of the area median income. The mayor pro tem makes 65% and the counselors make 50%.
Yep.
So it's like 30, 45, 65, something like that. And there were no benefits. If I weren't mayor, I couldn't have been mayor.
Yeah.
But now we can qualify for the city benefits, which makes a big difference.
Yeah.
I work about 70 hours a week.
Yeah.
But again, it's you don't do it for the money. You don't, you know. Yeah. So anyway, people ask me to run for mayor and I said, well,
let me just pause and just say thank you for your sacrifice there, because that is a very kind way to say. I mean, I a lot of leaders say, well, it's nothing, and that's true. Like a lot of leaders I meet, they wouldn't know what else to do. Like they're just being who they are. They're just leading. But leadership and sacrifice go together.
Oh, wow.
And that's a real thing.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. But I feel like the other thing when I talk to people, especially young people, would talk about being elected. I said, why do you want to be elected? Well, you know, I said, look, community service does not have a hierarchy. If you think being elected is somehow higher than picking up trash or being on your HOA board or having your neighbor over for dinner, you're totally wrong.
Well, those HOA board members, they have some power.
I always say, if you want real political power, you better be that. But what you do is community service. You know, we're all serving our community.
Yeah.
You can be a great parent, a great friend, a great neighbor. That's also community service.
Yeah.
You're building community. I just fell into this because people asked me to. And so I said, well, yeah, I think that is a way I could probably serve given my sort of obnoxiously extroverted nature, which, you know, is just the way it is. But there's no hierarchy. I always want to make that point to people. Being mayor is not lower than being a state rep, is isn't lower than being Congress. It's like, that's just such a strange notion to me. We're all pulling for our communities and our people and our families and our friends and our neighbors together. And at different phases in your life, you give differently. So I just want to always dispel that. And then what was the other part of that question?
Well, I mean, I would love for you to talk about, so your leadership is an act of service.
Yeah.
And the ways that you're giving back, but I would, 70 hours a week, you're probably finding yourself serving all over the city. Not only in individual conversation, but, you know, all kinds of different ways.
It never stops.
And I know a little bit about, high on really caring for our environment and really, you brought up water earlier. Mm-hmm. These are ways that I think in Fort Collins maybe appreciated more, maybe from the Midwest. I grew up in the Midwest. People wouldn't talk about loving their city by loving water rights and talking about water. But here, this is like a real way where you can care for our city.
Well, the governor appointed me to the Water Quality Control Commission for the state.
Yeah.
So we do water quality,
yep.
Which is also another thing I do. Service, I guess.
Starting
I do.
To stack up, Jenny.
I don't get me going. My husband's like, stop, stop. But
I'm going to get that law book out. We're going to start reading.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know how to talk about it other than I feel like we're all doing it. And it feels like, I'm not that comfortable talking about myself. I like talking about other people.
Well, let me ask you a specific leadership question.
Because sure.
I think about this a lot. How do you, in your various roles and in the different problems you're kind of trying to solve, how do you manage the tension, maybe is the right word, between like short-term needs, things that you know we've got to be about in the next 2 months or maybe 2 months is appropriate, versus the next 20 years.
Yeah.
And how do you navigate that space? Because a lot of mayors, a lot of leaders in our city have lived in that, and you're living that now.
Yeah, I am kind of a student of process and governance. So I always try to think about what's the proper role of government? What does government do well? And what does government not do well? Where should we not be, right?
Yeah.
And how do we, the government's fundamentally, it's the people, right?
Yeah.
So let's never forget that, it is the people. So government can be whatever anybody wants it to be because the people get to decide, right? And as Barney Frank says, government's the word we use for the things we choose to do together.
Yeah.
Okay. So government has the advantage of thinking ahead 50 years, right? When you're elected, I'm elected every 2 years, council every 4 years. So what you don't, in my view, what I don't want to be is a 2-year thinker, right? And I say I never got elected to get reelected.
Yeah.
That's not good, right? So half your brain has to be thinking 50 years, right? Mm-hmm. What are the serious investments we want to do now? Yep. A real emphasis I've had as mayor is let's pay back, go and do a lot of asset management, right?
Yeah.
Take the money we have now. And so we're not stealing from our future kids and grandkids,
right?
I will be the least sexy, the least flashy mayor you ever saw, right?
Yeah.
I want the most boring budget that plugs the holes.
Yeah.
As long as you've got me, I'll approve a budget like that, right? I'm not going for the next shiny thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think that way. And then of course, when you're thinking long-term, of course you have some midterm goals and then we have lots of plans and stuff in the city. And then there are inevitably the tasks that lead up to that with that sort of longer range goal in life. And then to me, always what is the purpose of government comes into mind.
Yeah.
I personally think that people work the best when there are the few, we already talked about rules before, when there are the fewest rules possible, that's when they flourish and innovate and they take risks, they feel more free.
Yep.
And I know that everyone doesn't get a fair shake and so that some people need a leg up. And to me, when we put into the communal pot, which is taxes and fees, to get something out for the community, it should benefit the people of the community.
Yep.
So those are sort of my guiding philosophies. So I'm really reticent to make too many rules or laws. In fact, I kind of specialize in removing them. That's my favorite.
I'm hearing your entrepreneurial upbringing.
Yeah. Oh, that's
come
right.
Out
that's probably
this, right?
True.
I mean, I really do. Because what entrepreneur, I mean, you can't be bogged down
don't
by a bunch
me
of
down.
Different
don't
things.
Stay, don't,
you
no,
can't
yeah.
be.
Yeah, no, no, no. We need to let people like flourish because humans are very, very smart.
Yeah.
And then I think a really proper role of government is to, well, especially the municipal level.
Yeah.
I love being at the state first because I can really see how they interact, right?
Yeah.
The municipal level is really about core services.
Yeah.
Right? So lucky for us, we have broadband, we have our public power, we have obviously our 3 water utilities, streets, curbs, snow removal, all these things that really make the city go.
Yeah.
And those are sort of my favorite city services are, the, again, the like the least flashy ones.
Yeah.
Because we're a wealthy community, we have been able to add in a wonderful forestry plan.
There's some privilege to that, right? I mean, not every municipality in our, even our nation, which, you know, compared to other nations is quite wealthy, even each municipality doesn't have that opportunity.
Oh, no, they do not. They do not have the Lincoln Center. They do not invest in arts and culture the way we do. They do not. And those are the things that we have added on top, our botanic gardens, right?
Yeah.
That people have chosen through their generosity when we ask them to raise their taxes on themselves.
Yeah.
They've said yes. Listen,
I had a conversation. I haven't had this conversation with the podcast of Darren Atterbury, former city manager, but I remember talking to him about the width of bike lanes. And you know, we have incredible bike lanes in our city. I mean, you wanna grow an appreciation, or just go to like a city where I grew up.
Right.
You're not. It's the clunky sidewalk, or
there's
you're
the white
going
line
against the cars.
Or,
you know,
yeah,
I mean, like good luck
risking life and limb.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So we have a lot of amenity stuff, and that's been provided by the largesse of the people who live here, creating the community they want to live in.
Right.
So
well, there's going to be someone, you know, 20, 30 years from now, that's going to look back at you and thank you.
Oh,
you know, for the way
that
you've done that. But I also hear you talk about. Even some equity pieces there, like where people who need a leg up, to give them a leg up.
Yes.
And we want them to be thriving and flourishing in our community as well. And so I would imagine that in your tenure and even leadership beyond mayor, that there have been opportunities for you to really care for underrepresented people in our community. And man, what a gift that is, because our nation is changing, our demographics are changing, and Fort Collins, is as it grows, there's going to be a lot of different folks that call this city home. Mm-hmm. And I would hope that hospitality that you experienced as a child and returned, you know, in your adult lives, that will just be trickled out everywhere across. And
we can afford it.
We can. So,
I mean, I always say we don't check if you're from La Porte or Venezuela. If you're in our town, we have services to help you.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of town that I was raised in and that I want to be mayor. And then people say, well, what's this whole thing and build it and they will come. I said, fine. That's also a value of mine.
Yeah.
If someone's here and they need something.
Well, I grew up in Iowa, so Field of Dreams is right up my alley. So
that's
a good quote that we can lay down on the podcast.
Yeah, we just lay it down. Wow. That's okay with me.
Yeah.
I don't see why not.
Well, and you know, I mean, I think about public service. I think about leadership, even your role. Like one of the analogies that was running through my mind, and you just correct me if this is just a flat out wrong way to think about this. So as I was driving here to interview you, I thought one of the word pictures that was kind of running through my mind is less like an individual, like sprinting race, much more of like a relay. You're not going to hold a baton forever.
No.
But someone was running well before you were. They passed you this baton of leadership. You ran for a while and you're going to pass it on to someone else.
Yeah.
And so how each and every one of us can honor the season and the space where we're leading this particular thing, but realize we're going to be passing this on.
Of course.
We're not going to run this out in perpetuity.
That's the design of our government here. And that, again, I think a lot about governance, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's really not Jenny. I mean, I bring Jenny to the role, but the role of mayor continues, right?
Yeah.
It's really about the mayor.
Yep.
And I play mayor for 4.5 years and take that responsibility on. People are like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I'm going to keep doing the same things. Right. I'm not going to be elected. I hope for anything. I hope Bob Bacon doesn't ask me to do anything else. but that whole idea and spirit and an ethic has just been part of, you know, people say, how long have you been a politician? I'm said first grade. I mean, what is a politician? A politician means someone of the people. That's all it means, like a physician, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm proud to call myself a politician because my dad said in first grade, when you go to school, Jenny, if the teacher needs someone to clean the desk after school, you're doing it. You're going to stay late and pick up trash. Like, you're going to serve your classroom.
Yeah.
And I don't do anything different today than I did when I was in first grade.
Yeah.
I just got elected. And when I'm not elected, I'll do the same thing. I promise you. We have a neighborhood dinner every month. You know, all sorts of things happening. So it's just, you just carry that with you. Yep. And then sometimes you're elected and sometimes you're not. And I will tell you, being elected is not the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Or not necessarily.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's sort of what I'm going to keep doing. I don't know what the actual task will be.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be similar.
Well, Jenny, I am, again, thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
I can see in you, I hear in you, you've loved our city for years and years and years. You're going to continue loving our city in a different context, in a different space. But I love what you just said. Like, I'm just like, I don't know what else to do. I'm going to be Jenny wherever I show up.
Correct.
And that servant leadership and that care for others with that little risk-free kind of attitude, entrepreneurial spirit, I think will continue to serve the people around you really, really well. And
actually, I'm looking forward to it. Like, Mayor, you have to, there's some guardrails.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like every single Tuesday night for 4.5 years.
Yeah, yeah. You've been right down the hallway.
Jen's
right?
Gonna bust out.
That's right.
I need a little more room. I need a lot more space in my life.
Yes.
Yeah. So
well, thank you so much.
Thank
I mean, this
you,
has
Jeff.
Been a joy of a conversation for me, even just me personally, just
me too.
To pick your brain on leadership and learn a little bit about your history. And
we're glad you and your family are in our community.
It is an incredible city to live in.
Oh, we're glad you're here.
I'm so grateful my kids are growing up here. We were talking a little before we started. My youngest walks to school or takes her electric scooter to school or whatever, and it is a good life.
It is.
It is a good life, and I hope that the gratitude that you learned about and brought back, that someone will take a piece of that from this conversation and check in on their neighbors
right.
who maybe have, just need to be cared for, or loved on, made brownies for, whatever it is. That gratitude and kindness I heard in you for sure, and I hope it just trickles out to our city and keeps going. So
a lot of times when I'm driving down to work, I put that song on, He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother. And it just reminds me every day, right? It's the path we walk.
Yes. Well, we're going to put a variety of different, show notes in the links below. Maybe we'll put that song down there
so people
can listen to
that. I love that.
We'll find that and we'll put that on. And it's a great city. You can come to council meetings on Tuesdays for a little bit longer. You'll hear Jenny. But thank you again so much for this. And just a reminder to all the listeners out there to share this episode. Let us know who we should interview next, because we love sitting down with people who are loving our city one life at a time. And check out all the other stuff that we're up to at lovefoco.com. Jenny, thanks again. And we'll release another episode coming soon.
Thanks for listening to the Love Foco Show. If today's conversation inspired you, share it with a friend who loves Fort Collins as much as you do. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And leave us a review. It helps more people discover us. To learn more about Love Foco and find opportunities for loving our city one life at a time, visit lovefoco.com. For now, keep loving Fort Collins well.